Hi, everyone. Hope you had a great weekend. I'm Tony Chen, and this is Fish and Bits, a business and data podcast on the world of seafood. In this episode, I'm going to analyze the largest cost to any fish farm, fish feed. In particular, I want to talk about some of the reasons behind what is causing farmers to see the highest prices ever for fish feed. I'll start by discussing what ingredients go into feed and where it comes from in the world. Then, I'll touch on some of the changing global patterns that influence the market around these ingredients, such as how the closure of the world's largest commercial fishery, the Peruvian anchovy fishery, is impacting the industry. Lastly, I'll talk on the impacts of these trends, how the industry is responding to these challenges, and the opportunity this gives for many companies working in the fish feed space. Let's dive in. Fish feed has always been the highest operational cost to any farm, and depending on the species, it can range anywhere from 50 to 70% of the total production cost to a farm, meaning that from all the expenses a farmer needs to analyze, feed is almost always not the number one priority. And since December of 2021, we've seen the commodity price of fish meal climb steadily almost 30% from $1,400 per metric ton to the last reported price of $1,800 per metric ton. And this is the result of a few different factors. The ingredients of fish feed can be largely broken down into four categories: proteins, lipids, carbohydrates, and a combination of fillers that include vitamins and minerals. The first three categories, protein, lipids, and carbohydrates, are the ones that drive the majority of the costs behind feed. I'm going to walk through each one of those and analyze the changes that are going on. Depending on the farm species, the level of these components may be slightly different, but generally speaking, across the board, they're all constructed in roughly the same ratios. These ingredients could be sourced from all over the world. Salmon in Norway can be fed a combination of soy from Brazil, fish from Peru, krill from Antarctica, and algae from the United States. What we see happening in prices for the last couple of years has been the result of an extremely unique combination of global events that are all happening at the same time. In the short term, these events have resulted in the spikes of commodity prices, but in the longer term, these impacts may change how the entire animal feed industry operates altogether. The long-term supply chain issues from COVID, wars across the world, and climate-related impacts are all happening at the exact same time and causing major disruptions. Now, let me explain. I'll start with the most expensive and largest component of fish feed, protein. Fish meal processed from wild-caught fish has historically been the main raw ingredient for this category. But in recent decades, we've also seen plant extracts like soy protein increasingly being used as a substitute. Of the major disruptions that we're seeing, soy protein would actually be considered one of the markets that's been disrupted the least, which is almost crazy to say. Compared to pre-pandemic levels towards the end of 2019, the price per metric ton of soybean meal has risen from $350 to $500 today, or a 43% increase, and the reason is mostly due to COVID-related recovery. As for the most part, the largest producing countries that make up over 80% of global supply of soybeans, Brazil and the United States, have avoided catastrophic events thus far. Fish meal, on the other hand, has seen much more disruption, which I'll discuss in the next section, as the source of fish meal, wild fisheries, has encountered some extreme challenges. The second most important component in fish feed is lipids or fats, and omega-3 fatty acids are specifically the lipids we're interested in. For the same reason that nutritionists recommend humans to eat fish for omega-3s, fish need to also be fed with omega-3s for the fatty acids to be translated into their muscle fibers. The main source of lipids for fish feed comes from fish oil, which is sourced primarily through wild fisheries. And the price of fish oil has literally doubled the last 2 years, from $2,000 per metric ton to over $4,000, for a massive increase of 100%. While supply chains for wild fisheries were also impacted by COVID, like pretty much every other market in the world, the larger concern here has been the developing challenges with the Peruvian anchovy market and the cancellation of the largest commercial fishery in the world. Stay with me here, as I found this to be the most interesting facet of my research for the story. The Peruvian anchovy fishery is the largest wild-caught fishery in the world, followed by the Alaskan pollock industry. This fishery produces roughly 4 million metric tons of anchovies each year, and almost all of it is being used for products like fish meal. As reported by the FAO, the country historically produces almost half of the entire world's supply of fish meal and a third of the world's supply of fish oil. But this year, due to early samples of the fishery and the impacts from one of the strongest El Niños on record, the government decided this summer to cancel the first of two fishing seasons. And just like that, one of the country's largest export markets was turned off. Fish meal plants in the country have shut down for the first time in 30 years, and the government has already issued subsidized payments to help fishermen keep their businesses afloat. The entire country is awaiting a decision for the second season that is scheduled to start next month. But from the experts I've spoken to, even if the fishery opens, quotas will likely remain smaller due to the impacts of the El Niño, and the impacts on the fish feed market will still continue to be felt for many months, if not years to follow. Now, the last major component of fish feed is carbohydrates, or starches and sugars, and these are considered the least expensive source of energy in fish meal. A unique fact that I found on the topic of carbs is that while carbs are a major source of energy for mammals, the concept of carboloading isn't really applicable for fish. For each gram of carbohydrate a human consumes, we can extract 4 calories of energy, while fish, they're only able to extract 1.6 calories for that same amount. Nevertheless, carbs are still by percentage a major component of feed, and they are being used as binding agents, and their volumes also help to reduce feed costs. Wheat and corn are the major sources of carbs in fish feed, and the prices for these commodities are still roughly 45% higher than pre-pandemic levels. Russia and Ukraine are both major global exporters of corn and wheat, and the war in Ukraine caused the price per ton of wheat to escalate 150% to over $500 per ton for a short period. Now, while currently the costs of these carbs have come down from their peak, the impacts of the war have already been felt, and the price spikes the feed companies have had to pay have been passed down to farmers. So what does this mean to farmers and the industry at large? Well, I see its impact developing in a few different ways. And while the signs may not seem like positive trends, I strongly believe the response and solutions during these challenging times will set the aquaculture industry on a much more predictable path for the future. Unfortunately for farmers, it looks like we're entering some heavy waters. In the short and midterm, it's hard to imagine that in any way feed prices will drop, and it's very likely that prices will actually continue to climb. The havoc created by the market impacts I've discussed are just going to take time to sort out, and that equates to the continuation of high prices. Additionally, combining high feed prices with unpredictable consumer demand and variable yields, it's just going to be a really tough time for farmers in many different regions. That said, I see two key opportunities coming out of these situations. For one, innovative companies who have been building alternative replacements to feed ingredients are having a golden moment of opportunity. The second is the acceleration of the science behind animal nutrition. The last time feed prices rose, the industry made a shift to include more soy in fish diets, and now we're seeing that pattern repeat itself. I'll walk you through some of the companies that have been working for years to replace parts of the major feed components. They've been raising money, lowering costs, and increasing their scale. First, and probably the least risky approach, is tapping into new fisheries. With modern science and better boats, we're able to harvest previously untapped species, such as Antarctic krill. Companies such as Rimfrost and Aker BioMarine have built commercial fishing fleets capable of producing krill oil and other products seen in fish feed. Currently, Aker is publicly traded with a market cap of $300 million. There are some obvious concerns over the exploitation and mismanagement like we have seen in other international fisheries, but in the short term, this solution does offer relief from the missing volumes coming out of places like Peru. Another solution that I've personally been fascinated with is the harvesting of invasive species like Asian carp, which companies like Nobilis have worked on. While the volumes of these invasive species are extremely small, I just love the idea of finding commercial solutions that improve ecological challenges. Another category, which has started to reach scale, is the replacement of fish oil by using microalgae and plant extracts. Both Veramaris and Corbion have commercial scale algae growing facilities that are capable of producing algae oil, and a large percentage, somewhere in the neighborhood of all salmon in Norway currently, are fed with feed that contain algae oil. On the plant extract front, companies like Yield 10, which supply omega-3 oils from genetically modified camelina plants, are starting the process to get approval to grow commercial scale volumes of their oil extracts. The last two categories I'm going to discuss are focused on protein replacement, and they are bacterial proteins and the commercial scale farming of insects. Companies growing bacterial single-cell proteins like Callista have raised over $200 million to build fermentation technology where microorganisms are feeding on outputs such as CO2 from power plants. This solution, while proven feasible, have not yet reached the commercial scale quantities just yet, but their factories are coming online as we speak. Insects are in the same category, and we should see the first commercial scale usage very soon. On paper, it makes sense. We can raise insects and use the product as a protein and lipid replacement. It was just announced this last week that Tyson's Foods had made an investment into the insect company Protix to jointly build and operate the first at-scale facility to process insect protein, and it's going to be built in the U.S. This announcement comes on the heels of another insect company, Insect with a Y, that just raised $175 million in Series D funding earlier this spring. The last thing I wanted to touch on is the impact that all of these innovations will have on the progress of advancing the science behind animal nutrition. In the earlier days of fish farming, farmers just tried to fish feed what they naturally ate. Fish feed contained a limited number of ingredients, but over the course of time, that has changed due to the cost and scale of the industry. As we move forward, we'll undoubtedly see an increase in the usage of these alternative ingredients. And I haven't even talked about the vitamins, minerals, and probiotics that are included in modern feeds. The combinations of formulations will get even more complex, and the need to further the science behind nutrition will grow. It's one thing for a new ingredient to work in the lab. It's a whole different challenge to get it out into the field. But companies are recognizing this challenge. An example of this can be seen in Cargill's recent investment in their Feed Innovation Center, located in Dirdal, Norway. While it was a small $1.2 million investment, it scaled the number of net pens from 3 to 12 that are being used to conduct field trials. And this gives Cargill the opportunity to dramatically increase the number of combinations they can commercially field test. As the science develops, I really look forward to seeing the improvements that can be made to de-risk the cost of fish feed for farmers. Aquaculture is inherently a volatile business, but if the industry can better stabilize their highest operating costs, we'll be able to develop this market that much more. That's it for today, guys. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed learning more about the business and data behind fish feed. As always, if you find this content interesting, please consider subscribing and sharing with a friend. It would really help us a ton. See you next week.